VGMP.
Hey, C, welcome to a brand new episode of VGMP DLC, C. It's where we do the mini episodes where we review TV shows and shorts, C. I'm your host, Jamie Evans, joined by Mr. Rory Jocelyn. Today, C, it's episode 3 and 4 of the Fallout TV series, C.
That's right. Is this an American today... learning the alphabet? I mean...
That's right. Today, we are doing episodes 3 and 4 of Amazon's Fallout TV series. Those of you who joined us last week will recall that we absolutely hated episode 1 and 2.
Yep.
They were hot garbage.
Certainly episode 1 was unbelievable garbage.
Yeah. So today's episode might surprise you because actually, I'll be the first to admit it, the show is improving.
Yeah, honestly, by episode 4 is a really good episode.
Mm. 3 was pretty good.
3 was pretty good. Episode 4 is the best so far.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, when they can craft an episode as good as episode 4, why did they craft episode 1 so badly?
It's just a garbage pilot, isn't it?
It's awful.
We have said, haven't we, pilots are difficult, but the mind-blowing thing about this, and obviously we haven't seen the whole show yet.
Yeah.
It's basically a case of they've started the show at the wrong point in the story.
Yeah.
Because what we're getting now should be lots of intrigue and would be. It would be very effective intrigue and very effective reveals, except it's already been revealed.
Yeah, it's like, so maybe this goes into, do you remember there was a thing where movie trailers, they put a lot of spoilers into the trailer.
Studies have shown that people actually like spoilers.
Yeah, because it means
they know what they know exactly what they're going
to
get.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it gives people that similar effect to when you watch something like a film that you love again and again and again. It's not going to change. It's the same film every time, but there's a comfort in that. I think maybe that's what it comes down to.
Maybe.
But it kind of feels like they tried to do that here in the series itself by spoiling all the decent story arcs, or at least some of the interesting plot twists, right at the start. Yeah. So that when they happen, you're like, oh, and that's connected to that.
It's exactly...
But it ruins it.
It's exactly what we said. Our biggest criticism in the first... We had two big criticisms in the first episode. One, which they've addressed, for some reason that I don't understand. I would understand if this was a traditional TV show, as in before the streaming age.
Sure.
Because for those who don't know, although I'm sure everyone does these days, the way TV shows used to be made is you'd make a pilot episode, that's why they're called pilots, and you'd make that first. That would be made months before the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And that's basically usually made on a lower budget because you don't know if the show's going to get funded.
Well, it depends, because with Star Trek, the pilots always had a higher budget than the series would get per episode proper.
Right, okay, fair enough then.
Yeah, but I suppose it depends entirely on the show.
Yeah, and that's basically used as a marketing thing. And it's why in a lot of shows, particularly American shows, you notice a difference in both production value and tone between the pilot and the following episodes.
Yeah.
Because that pilot will have actually been shown to the studio months before the season went into production, and they'll have gone, change this, change that, etc. This wasn't made that way. This is streaming. This was all ordered eight episodes in one go.
Yeah, they've already ordered season 2, by the way. That's been announced.
Yeah, so I don't understand how they suddenly got so much better at lighting.
Yeah, that is also true.
Because the lighting's garbage in the first episode. It's flat, as hell. Yeah. It was great in in episode 4. 3 was good as well, but 3's mostly out in the daylight.
Yeah.
Episode 4... wonderful atmospheric lighting, excellent use of shadow, of colour, and varied colours as well, because you had, when they're in the desert housing part, there's like the sandy yellow when they're in that house contrasting with like the chipped green paint.
Yeah.
And when you go into the supermarket, you've got that sort of horrible pale blue that really depressing supermarkets have, with just tinges of the neon that
almost
still works.
Yeah.
But even the vault, so, because that's a location that's in the pilot.
Yeah.
In the pilot, the vault is lit so flatly. Why is it suddenly lit so much more atmospherically?
Yeah.
Did they sack the gaffer? and replace them?
I don't know. Maybe they just got more comfortable as they went on to be a bit more experimental with how they lit it. Or maybe they were on a tight time scale on the first one.
Maybe. I almost want to... Well, to be fair, it was longer. Mm. So maybe it was longer, but they didn't have any actual extra time in the schedule.
Yeah, so it's like, just light it flat so we can get it all done.
I don't know. Part of me is wondering if maybe I was just being a dickhead and I need to watch it again and maybe I'd feel differently.
I mean, you would...
About the lighting, the second problem, I don't think I would.
No. With the lighting, I think you were a little harsh on the first one, because it wasn't terrible. It didn't look bad. It was just flat. Yeah, it wasn't like James Bond Spectre terrible. You know, the colours made sense. It was just flat. With this one, we get... So there's some interesting story building here, where we go into Vault 32, which is the vault that they got attacked from with the Raiders. And when they go in there, it's dark. It's, you know, like, it's basically a shutdown vault that's been destroyed. The lighting there is really good. Huge use of shading in that. And you know, using your light and darks. It looks fantastic. And it builds intrigue as well with the story, because you're now sitting there. He's been told by one of the Raiders what they were doing in there wasn't innocent.
We've got a mystery form.
Yeah, and then it turns out that the Raiders didn't kill the people in Vault 32. They killed each other 2 years ago. So the Raiders have entered using an outside... They've used a Pip-Boy to get in from the outside.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's Lucy McLean's mum.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we've got Moses Arias, who is playing Lucy's brother, so also a McLean. Moses Arias plays Norm McLean, so he's basically like it's his mum as well. We get a flash of a young version of his mum, who's we find out the name is Rose. It's tinging on a mystery. The other thing it does is there's a really great scene in a supermarket. It's not actually being used as a supermarket. It's being used as an organ donation and, like, not by will service. And
organ harvesting is the word you're looking
for. That's the better word, yes. Organ harvesting, because they're not donating, they're harvesting them. There's a bit where Lucy has to kill a... someone who's turned.
Yeah.
They're
a ghoul.
A ghoul, but there's anyone who doesn't know from the series, the ghouls are normal people, but they've got like almost decayed skeletal faces. But over time, they eventually turn feral, which is where they become basically zombies, for a lack of a better term. And there's a woman who is sort of right on the edge of changing. She's clearly more feral than she is not, but every now and then she can say her own name.
She's desperately trying to remember her own name.
Yeah, trying to hold on to her consciousness, but it's slipping away. And Lucy has to make the ultimate choice and kill her, which she does. Now, that piece would have worked. That piece, like, the scene itself is fantastic. How it plays out in the episode is fantastic. The problem is where we've seen a lot of just general murder from the main ghoul character that we've been following, Walton Goggins.
It's all very over-the-top violence as well, isn't it?
So there's lots of bits being blown off and things like that, and people losing body parts, etc. When we get to this point, this should have been a shocker for us as we follow Lucy on her journey. And this is like, oh, damn, we're going to have to go more aggressive and violent and potentially flex on the golden rules, etc. Yeah. that she's had established in the vault. But the point is, where we're meeting it here at episode 4, and we've seen so much other bullshit, we're already desensitized to it.
Mm.
So the shock is gone. But I will say the scene still played out very well.
Yeah, and the reason this episode works so well, and this leads on to what the second problem with the pilot was,
yeah,
this is written properly.
Yeah.
Which is, although it's part of a serial, i.e. all 8 episodes is one story, this episode has its own story with its own theme that is resolved within the episode.
Yeah.
Which is at the start of the episode, her and the ghoul meet his friend who's turning feral.
Yep.
And he kills him, Mercy kills him, and then he pulls bits out to eat him, doesn't he?
Yeah. Exactly.
She has this philosophical argument with him about the golden rule, and he basically says, you're not going to survive up here if you're clinging to rules like that.
Yeah.
And he says to her, doesn't he, because he basically calls her a hypocrite, because she's going, you know, we had hardship in the vault too. One year there was a famine and loads of people starved and blah blah such and such happened and no one turned violent. And he looks at her a bit like, oh, you naive bastard.
Yeah.
And he's like, didn't they? And she goes, what do you mean? And he goes, there's a difference between what people say they did and what they actually did behind closed doors to survive. And the whole episode is her having to break these rules, starting with her having to give in and drink radioactive water.
Yep.
Because it's that or die of thirst. Mm-hmm. She loses a finger. She takes his finger. He takes her finger.
Yep.
And then, as you say, she ends up becoming a killer at the end of the episode.
Yeah, she's not killed anyone up to this point.
Yeah.
Technically, she
you only could ever argue, in self-defense.
Yeah, yeah. So you could technically argue she killed the raider that shagged her in the first episode. But again, as you say, that's self-defense.
No, she didn't even kill him. Remember, he comes back and then Kyle MacLachlan drowns him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He should have been dead because she stuffed a piece of fucking glass in his neck.
Yeah.
But apparently people don't die in this show. And then obviously what your big hook at the end is she goes through all that and then makes the conscious character decision to not become like the ghoul.
Yeah.
Because she comes out and he's passed out, hasn't he? Because he's starting to feel the effects of turning. And she's got the medicine that he needs. And you get the moment where she's standing above him looking at him and she's trying to decide, well, actually, the lesson you're trying to teach me, ghoul, is I shouldn't give you this. Because then you can take me prisoner again, you might try and sell me to someone else, etc. Yeah. But she says to him, doesn't she, I might end up looking like you, but I'm never going to be you.
Yeah.
And she leaves him the medicine.
Yeah, and to be fair, I liked it when she went golden rule.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. Which was cool. One thing that doesn't make sense in this episode, Matt Berry's in this episode as the voice of a robot.
Yeah.
They do that a lot now.
But we know he's going to physically appear as well at some point because he was in the trailer at the end of the first one, wasn't he?
So I'm guessing he voices all the robots. And
he's obviously like playing someone who's controlling them remotely, isn't he?
But either way, so he plays the voice of a robot in this one, which is pretty cool. But that character, there's this thing it does that makes zero sense. So as we've mentioned, before she arrives at the supermarket, she gets her finger cut off by the ghoul because she cuts off the ghoul's finger. Mm. When she arrives, the robot takes her and he's like, oh, no, we wouldn't. She's like, I thought you were going to be sold into sex work. He's like, oh, no, that's disgusting. We're just going to harvest your organs. But before they get to that bit, he notices her fingers covered. He's like, oh, you poor thing. I'll see if I've got a replacement. And he replaces her finger so that she's now a complaint. She's like, oh, that feels great. Thanks. That's brilliant. And he's like, right, now we're going to harvest your organs. And basically he's going to kill her because he's got a chainsaw and a stick. And you're like, well, why replace the finger then?
Yeah, why bother replacing it? If other than, that's a bit of bad writing, I think, because basically they needed her to lose the finger as the symbolism for she takes his finger.
Yeah.
But then they obviously don't want her to not have a finger for the rest of the season, even though you could. Like, there's no reason. It's only one finger.
Yeah, it's good. You don't want to leave her mutilated.
Ethan Winters does the whole Resident Evil 8 missing two fingers. Yeah. So, yeah, screw that. But, so they've stuck one back on so she's got a finger. But actually, it doesn't make any storyline sense.
As to why they would have reapplied one.
Unless it's that he's then going to cut the hand off and sell it as a complete hand. But surely someone would look and go, well, that finger doesn't match the rest.
Yeah, so it makes zero story sense. The other thing that I thought was good, but again, somewhat ruined by the pilot, is once Walton Goggins has been saved by Lucy and she walks off, he then goes in to take, like, basically steal as much of the drug that's left as possible, and they've got a TV in there with these old tapes, and one of the tapes is him as in one of his Western movies that we saw that he was doing before the fallout happened.
Yeah.
And this would have been the perfect reveal that this guy had a life before he was a ghoul. It's ruined by the fact that they've already shown it unnecessarily.
As we said in the pilot, we did not need that opening scene of him and his daughter when the nukes go off.
No.
That has actually done nothing but cripple the series.
Yeah, we also didn't need any of the flashback stuff that's happened so far at the point that it's happened.
Yeah.
I'm not saying not to have it.
No, do it later.
Do it later as we learn about the ghoul.
Yeah.
This would have then been an awesome reveal. Oh my God, like what? That's him. Why has he got a whole face and why is he doing cowboy
imagine
westerns?
Imagine doing that flashback here, because you spent this whole episode and the last episode being like, okay, well, the ghoul's a bad guy. He's trying to kidnap Lucy and take her to sell her.
He's a heartless son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's going to sell her and whatnot. She forgives him. Well, doesn't forgive him. She spares him, sorry. Says golden rule, motherfucker, and walks off.
Yeah.
then we get him coming in, he does all those drugs, he flops down on the sofa, and then we get the reveal, oh shit, this guy isn't just a monster, he was a person beforehand, and now all that thematic stuff where he's been like, you know, the wasteland turns you hard, blah, 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 all makes sense.
Yes.
I just, you know, far be it for me to criticise the brother of Christopher Nolan, or people who know better than I do.
The man who made Westworld.
But I just can't help but feel that the show would have been so much better if it had have started later.
Yeah.
The pilot should have been entirely in the vault.
Yeah.
There should have been nothing except the vault in the pilot.
Yep.
There was no need for the pilot to be an hour and 20 minutes.
Nope.
Keep it a regular length episode, end with her getting out the vault, right?
Yeah. It's someone who doesn't respect your time.
Then your narrative splits into what her brother's doing back at the vault and what she's doing.
Yep.
Add the ghoul in.
Yep.
And now I'm about to get controversial. The other part of this, we've said, didn't we, that the other problem with the pilot was there was too much crammed into it.
Yeah, we had four separate main storylines we were following all at once.
Yeah.
That had no main story resolution within the pilot itself, which was Lucy, we had the ghoul, we had the guy you're about to talk about, which is the Brotherhood of Steel guy.
Yeah.
And there was also the scientist guy who then got nerfed out in the second episode. Yeah. But he was given as much story credence as the other three in the pilot.
We got nearly the whole way through this episode before I realised that the Brotherhood of Steel storyline does not appear at all in this episode. Yeah. Not once. They're not even mentioned, right? And I sat there and I thought to myself, I haven't missed them.
No.
And the episode has flowed so much better without that storyline. Now, this is where people all disagree with me, and that's fine, because this is a personal taste thing. Because obviously, I'm not a fan of the games.
No.
So I understand that people who are fans of the games
want
the Brotherhood of Steel in it.
Yeah.
It'd be like me watching a Resident Evil film, and we have watched Resident Evil film, and there's no STARS members in it. Like, I get it. For me personally, what the show has shown me so far, I'd be good if they never mentioned the Brotherhood of Steel again, and if that giant fucking robot thing never turns up again. Because honestly, it looks dumb. It feels dumb. Mm-hmm. And it takes away...
I don't have a problem with the Brotherhood of Steel mech. I also don't have a problem with the idea of it being in the world. Mm. It was put in way too soon.
Yeah.
We didn't need as much backstory as we've got on it at the stage we're at. It needed to come in later if it was going to come in.
Mm.
And we just have this horrible feeling that it seems to be setting up a villain arc, which, as we mentioned last week, which would be great.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't... look. So episode 3 has quite a lot more of the Brotherhood of Steel guy. So episode 4 is the better of the two, because he's not in it. But Aaron Moten's storyline is in the third one quite a bit.
And it was better in the third one.
It was better in that one.
Because he gets his ass kicked as well a bit, doesn't he?
Well, he gets his ass kicked, and then they send him a new squire, which is his friend from back at the barracks.
Who's bullied him before.
Yeah, and now he's sort of able to... he's got to pretend he can't come out of his uniform, or out of the mech suit, because the guy will know he's killed.
Not Titus.
Yeah, he's not Titus. Yeah. So he's got to keep the squire with him, but not show his face.
Mm.
And he's basically abusing Titus. Not Titus, abusing the squire. But he's doing it in such a way as like, well, this is your turn now, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And that's fine as a villain arc.
And that was a decent little bit in that episode, actually, was the bit where the squire is talking about the fact that he obviously thinks Aaron Moten's character's dead. Because he says he got killed in action, didn't he?
Mm.
And they actually have this little conversation about the perpetuation of violence, where he's like, well, when I first joined the Brotherhood, a lot of people picked on me. And then, is it Dane, Aaron Moten's character?
No, Aaron Moten's character is Maximus. Dane was the non-binary character.
That
he had sliced the foot off.
Right. So then Maximus turns up, and he's like, oh, then Maximus turned up, and he was the new guy. So I felt okay bullying him, yeah, because it felt like, well, at some point, another new guy will come along, and then Maximus can bully him. And I felt like that was a good piece of writing, because that extrapolates out to the whole series,
yes,
and the whole human race's attitude of, well, it's okay if I do a bad thing, because at some point, life's done a bad thing to me.
Yeah, and it's just paying it forward.
Yeah,
and that's what the ghoul has been saying. That's what the scientist said to Lucy, yeah, when he first met her.
And that's how we've ended up with the fallout.
Yeah,
it's obviously a mutually assured destruction thing from the Cold War, isn't it?
Yeah,
where it's like, well, they launched
the USSR satellites and stuff that have, yeah, landed in America and stuff like, yeah, that as well.
Well, if they've launched nukes, then we're launching nukes. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that was all right. To be honest, I didn't have any problems with episode 3, except for one stupid bit. We've talked, haven't we, about how the first two episodes had a real problem with tonal whiplash?
Yes.
For the most part, episode 3 and 4 have not had that.
Yeah.
Except for one bit in 3. Most of 3 takes place around this sunken city in California. Great set. Really liked it. It was really cool as a nice contrast to... This is just me personally. I know some people like it. I'm not a big fan of the Mad Max feel,
no,
where everything's desert wasteland. I never have been. I don't really like Mad Max. I don't really like it in the game. It's probably one of the reasons I don't really like the Fallout games. Solar punk, as they call it, just isn't something that
I don't think
appeals
that's
to me. Is that not solar punk?
No, that's it looks... I think that's just apocalypse stuff.
No, well, I mean that Mad Max, yeah, look.
Solar punk would be something like cyberpunk, where you're enhancing a world in a like a big corporate, but it's to do with... It's kind of a new term, solar punk, so it's kind of not well-defined, but it'd be essentially... Think cyberpunk, but using solar panels, which to me doesn't sound like it would make a great aesthetic, but we'll see how it goes. There's a Perfect Dark game being made, a new one, that's they've switched from cyberpunk to solar punk.
Guess we'll see what that looks like then.
Yeah, but I as far as I can tell, it's going to be all yellows and oranges like, yeah, the sun. That's well, what
thing,
I get
it's,
in my head.
It's like later on in VGMP this year, we're doing Resident Evil Extinction.
Yes.
Which is famously all set in desert. And again, I mean, none of the Resident Evil films are good, but that's the worst one, pretty much. Because it looks so ugly.
Yeah.
Anyway, they get to this nice sunken city, and there's a big mutated axolotl that they're fighting.
Yes.
Right? And this is all well and good, except at one point the axolotl grabs the squire and it's going to eat him. And all of a sudden... What I can only describe as Benny Hill music starts playing.
Yes, it's and totally it's, wrong music for the
It
point,
just deflates
it? Yeah.
All the... Like, the minute it, yeah, happened, I was like, oh, we're not meant to care that this character might,
yeah,
die.
Yeah, oh, the squire's gonna die.
Yeah.
Like, but actually, at this point, honestly, the Maximus character I could not give a fuck about,
yeah,
unless he's got the squire. The squire, yeah, actually is making the Maximus character work at this point, because he's,
yeah,
to be honest, better
I'll
than
I'll
he
be,
was.
I'll
because
be, yeah, better than he was, but I'll be honest, I still, honestly, they're not going to, but if they dropped that storyline, I'd be fine, because I don't care. Now, it might be because I like a mystery narrative, and, yeah, that's the storyline with no mystery in it.
No, there is no, apart from why they may be hunting for the head as well.
Yeah, but really, that just ties into Lucy's.
Yeah, yeah, that's
one.
The thing. You've already got a what's the point in the head storyline, yeah, going. All you've got is two going, and one's way more interesting than the other.
Yeah. But I do think this episode, particularly episode 4, 3 as well, I really like the dynamic that's growing between Lucy and the ghoul.
Yeah.
And I think Ella Purnell and Walton Goggins are definitely doing a lot of the heavy lifting in this show.
Yeah.
Walton Goggins in particular, I'm really impressed, yeah, by. I feel like he's one of those actors who doesn't get... Because he's not like a traditionally good-looking guy. Because, yeah, he's got like a shit hairline and stuff.
That's right. Just rip into the man.
Well, I'm sure he's... I'm sure he would admit he's no Tom Cruise, but I actually have never seen him be bad in anything.
No.
He's always good. And when they announced, honestly, my only interest in watching this was when they announced that he was in it.
Yeah.
And then they announced he was going to be under makeup the entire time. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure if that's going to work. He's doing a really good job. Because I'll be honest, the makeup looks a little goofy, actually.
It looked a little It looks a little plasticky in points.
Yeah, whenever he's not got the hat on. When he's got the hat on, it actually looks okay.
Yeah.
Because it shades it a bit and whatnot.
Yeah,
but when he takes the hat off, it does look a little bit plasticine-y.
Yeah.
But he's selling it, and best of all, he is still able to emote through it.
Yeah.
Because that's the risk you always run when you're covering an actor's face in latex, is what if we can't get the emotions through it?
Really good actors, like, I mean, superb actors managed to do it. The guy who plays Saru in Discovery, he is one of, if not the MVP of Discovery. Doug Jones.
Oh, Doug Jones. Yeah. Well, of course he's the MVP of doing that, because he's built his whole career on it, hasn't he?
I know, but what an amazing, like, his acting is subtle as Saru, and yet he's being subtle through a shitload of makeup. And usually with makeup, you have to over-exaggerate in order to get your expressions to be visible. This man's doing it with his eyes. He's incredible.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Fallout.
He's the guy who plays, I think he got an Oscar nom for this. He may even have won. I don't think he won. I think he just got nominated. He's the creature in The Shape of Water.
Oh, he's also in Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one with the eyes and his hands.
Pan's Labyrinth, you mean?
Oh, I know. I've never seen either, so yeah, I don't know which Pan's Labyrinth. Is which.
Yeah. Original Labyrinth is David Bowie.
I thought it was that one.
No.
He was in that one.
No, that's Pan's Labyrinth, where he's got the eyes in his hands.
Right.
Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo del Toro likes working with him because he's in Shape of Water, he's in Pan's Labyrinth, and I do believe he's also in the two Guillermo del Toro Hellboy movies.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
It would make sense, since that usually requires a lot of makeup, and Doug Jones does a brilliant job through makeup.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I quite, don't get me wrong, this still isn't...
This isn't like
my favourite TV show I've ever seen.
No.
But I'm much more positive about this show after episodes 3 and 4 than I was after episodes 1 and 2. I'm hoping, touch wood, it can keep this level of quality and we'll be able to look back at the end and just say the show gets off to a bit of a rocky start but finds its feet.
Yeah.
Because I hated that pilot.
No, honestly, the pilot is not salvageable. The only way to do it is a complete re-edit and cut out most of it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, some people would say was sacrilege because that's how it's meant to be
done.
And
honestly, I'm going
to
say this. Stop trying to be funny. No, that's what I meant about the Benny Hill thing.
Yes.
None of the comedy in this is landing.
It's not a funny show, really. Well, dark humour now and then would work.
The only jokes that have landed have all been Walton Goggins, and it's because they're delivered super dry, super cynical, as that character is and should be because of the hellish life he's led.
Yeah,
his are the only jokes that have landed for me in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's because none of them are laugh out loud, you know, sitcom style, let's pause for the audience to laugh. They are just quick asides where he'll like say something under his breath or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's funny.
The attempt to make this more MCU-esque is still on display, but by episode four, certainly it's been subdued a lot. I think they've worked out dramas better than comedy. The problem with the first pilot as well, another problem is that it keeps trying to be funny. And it's like, you're not funny.
My big fear and prediction coming up is, given that this story had no Brotherhood of Steel in it, I've got a sinking feeling that one of the upcoming episodes will be nearly all Brotherhood of Steel, which is fine for some people, but for me, as that's the part of the storyline I do not care about, and because I think those mechs look fucking stupid, and... to be honest, fair enough to disagree, that's fine. I personally don't think they actually fit into the world.
They are in the game, so you can't
say that. No, that's fine, but they don't fit the aesthetic. It can be bad game design as well. When the airships turned up in the pilot, that blew my mind. I was like, what? Like, I thought this is a world that got stunted in the 1950s because of nuclear fallout. You're telling me we've got Iron Man armors, but everyone's still watching 1950s televisions.
Yeah, so we've still got... But it's kind of an interesting pastiche, because they also had robots in the 50s in this universe. So even the 50s of this universe isn't our 1950s. Because they still had the floating robot that Matt Berry was the voice of in the fourth episode. Yeah. We saw one of those in the pilot before the nukes went off in the house. So
is it an alternate history thing then? So their 1950 was ahead of our 1950.
Yeah, but it then got stunted in their 1950.
Oh, I hate those.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yeah.
A personal choice, though. That's nothing to do with...
That's very much things like The Man in the High Castle and that sort of thing.
Yeah, see, that's another one that I do want to see, but I've heard that only the first season's good and then it all falls apart.
Well, I don't know. I haven't watched it.
But I think that's because it's based on a book and the first season is the book and then they had to make shit up afterwards.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, just do it as a limited series, you dumb fucks.
Yeah, but everything has to be an MCU now, Mike.
I know. Tie-in media. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. I actually am a lot more happy about moving on to episode 5 and 6.
Yep.
So that's good.
Yeah, and I agree. The only thing I would say differently to you is if they end up doing an episode with that is almost purely Brotherhood of Steel, simply because they were completely absent from episode 4, I don't have a problem with that. The thing they would need to do to make it work, we've already established who we're following. Add some mystery in. Not just the same mystery that's with Lucy, which is, what's the head for? Like, establish some mystery about what they're doing. Add some separate stakes. Mm. And if you're going to do mostly an episode on it, really build up that world around him for that episode. Because if you're going to do one, focus.
Yeah.
Because, it is weird that he's not in this. And you are right, I didn't miss him. But if the payoff for that is we get a whole episode on them, then at least do like this. Don't try and make it overly comical. Mm. Focus on building the world around him and actually set up a mystery for us to want to follow on forwards with that character.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. That was another episode of VGMP DLC. Please do feel free to let us know what you thought about episodes 3 and 4 of Fallout. You can write to us at info.impalafilms@gmail.com. You can also like, share, subscribe, leave us reviews, things like that. Pretty please. We would be really grateful. And if you hold on for just a second, you can check out a sneak peek trailer of this coming weekend's episode of VGMP Retro, where we will be reviewing
Resident Evil.
Ah, the crap fest that is the first Paul Anderson Resident Evil. Oh, I bet you can't wait for that, can you? Laser corridors and AI girls. That's Resident Evil in it right there. Oh, baby. Talk about video game adaptation strain from the source material. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. I'm a bitter old man, and I'll see you next time. It's time to take on my arch nemesis, Paul W.S. Anderson. Dun, dun, dun!
You're all going to die down here.
Luckily, Jamie is going to be balanced and fair.
I bet you that's a spec script he had lying around that no one would fund because it's stupid. And then he went, oh, I know, I'll somehow get the rights to Resident Evil.
I shot it 5 times. How is she still standing?
Bitch isn't standing now.
Mia Jovovich actually injured 3 crew members during this scene,
himself.
Including Paul Anderson himself.
Yep, which I'm sure you're happy about. Right hooked Paul W.S. Anderson in the face.
I want him in the Nemesis program.
Originally, Sarah Michelle Gellar was going to play Alice. However, Sarah Michelle Gellar turned it down because she didn't like the violence, and specifically, she didn't like the nudity. Which, considering, as we say, we saw full Jovovich, I can understand Michelle Gellar probably looked at that and went, you don't need to see all of that.
Game over, yeah!
Cyberpunk Studios.